Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Chris Vandercook. Good morning, Beth Ann.
Good morning.
The disasters that we hear about on the news sometimes leave us with a feeling of helplessness, yeah?
Well, for a lot of people, that would be true, or just knowing how they should respond or just dealing with the fact that they are responding.
Well, we certainly have enough of them that we keep hearing about, don't we?
Well, you know, it's true, and it may be trite to say that the world has grown smaller, but that emotional connection to events around the world, from the disappearance of Malaysian Flight 370 to the mudslide in Snohomish County, is anything but. How people far from events react is part of the focus of a gathering of 2,600 mental health professionals in Hawaii this week. Social trauma, grief, and culture-centered practices are all on the agenda. American Counseling Association President Dr. Cerisi West Olatunji joins us now to look at some of those trends. Thank you for coming in this morning and making time for us.
Thank you for inviting me. Mahalo.
There is such a smallness about the world that technology has afforded us, and the reactions that we feel when we see despair, when we see disasters that are both natural and making and certainly terrorist in origin, can't be avoided for a lot of people. But how do we deal with that in a culturally sensitive way, given the fact that these people can be so far flung from the events themselves?
Yes, it is a very important issue to think about. How are we connected to these events that seem geographically very far away from us, but we're impacted? And so counselors definitely are trained to be able to do that. Our conference has really focused on that. So we have about 2,600 people who are in attendance here, but actually we serve about 55,000 counselors who are training to better serve people. Trauma is something that is of increasing concern to us. And so, for instance, one of the things that we're offering here is a demonstration series. So counselors can have the opportunity to see a demonstration of how to respond to, let's say, a campus shooting, of how to respond to a natural disaster, can see it in operation by trained professionals, and then have conversation about how they can implement that locally.
But we've had those disasters before. We've had horrible things happen, you know, going back to Columbine and well before that. It seems, though, that this would be something that they would already know. Or has it changed so much that you have to tweak it and show them something different?
There are some small changes that are significant for us as providers. One is the use of technology. So we know that people are using technology. I'll give you an example. Following the Hurricane Katrina disaster in the Gulf Coast region, a lot of people couldn't use their telephones, but they could text. And so they were getting information out using their telephones to communicate, to find people.
Their mobile phones.
Yes, their mobile phones. And so we can use that same technology to share information about how to cope following a disaster, to explain to people about how they might cognitively respond to a disaster, about the cognitive fugue that often happens that compromises their ability to make decisions, about their ability to even be in control of their bodies. And so we can provide that information to people immediately, almost instantaneously, if we know how to respond. What's different? We know that disasters are on the rise, both natural and human-made disasters. And so we need to be better prepared to not only be able to respond expediently, but also to use technology to be able to educate and also to orient and to provide interventions.
How would you rate the idea that, well, we know that we should be prepared, and we say that to people all the time, including making sure they have enough food and water at home in case a natural disaster would strike here or another type of disaster. And that seems to go onto the to-do list, but every day it gets a little lower and a little lower. But for your constituency, this, I would take it from what you've just said and how you are trying to push this agenda, seems to be that it's at the top of the list.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that we spend a lot of time on is advocacy for the profession. And we spend time lobbying on Capitol Hill to speak to policymakers. And I think that, you know, it's very human to not want to think about disasters. Who wants to think about something that isn't positive? So it's very difficult for us to think ahead to prepare for disasters. We also know that it's very labor intensive to train for disaster. So unfortunately, we have this juxtaposition. We don't want to think about it until it happens. And when it happens, we don't have the time to really train people to work effectively in communities. You know, I like what you've mentioned about culture and the relationship between culture and effective disaster response.
Well, when you were in Katrina, after the aftermath of Katrina, that was a very different experience than someone who might have been, you know, born and raised in, San Francisco might have felt, or any other place, coming there and not really understanding that people were having reactions not just to physically, oh my God, my house is gone, but the enormity of it in a very different way.
Absolutely. I think that, for those of us who are participating in the conference, that you'll be able to see that there are many models of counseling following a disaster, following a crisis, that are being offered. And one of those models is culture-centered, the idea that we need to include and incorporate and honor the ways in which communities have historically responded to crises. What resources do they have to cope within their own context? Because we know that when we build upon their existing coping skills, that they're much more sustainable. We know that as we leave those communities, that people are more likely to continue to use those resources. Now, that's important primarily because what we understood after Hurricane Katrina is that our typical model or historical model of disaster response needs to be changed. Hurricane Katrina, the people in the Gulf Coast region were the largest group of people. It covered the largest landmass.
And now we have people who are all over the world who are very upset, still grieving over what happened with the investigation with the Malaysian flight, and knowing people, it's not that far away for many, many folks. To be able to trace it back to someone or something that's involved with that. And certainly what's happening up in Snohomish County. What would you offer to those who are dealing with both sets of disasters?
That's a very good point that you brought up, and it's about how do we grieve, the grief and loss process. We have a whole group of counselors who specialize in grief and loss counseling. So what is so different about perhaps a plane going down and people not being able to identify where are their loved ones? This complicates the grieving process for people.
But the fact that we have more grief and more disasters, or more disasters ergo more grief, means that this is going to be pretty much top of mind for a lot of the counselors that you're meeting with, all 2,600 of them, and 55,000 that you serve. Thanks so much for being with us this morning, and
thank
good luck with the conference.
Thank you very much. Mahalo.
Dr. Sarisi West Olatunji is president of the American Counseling Association. She's also professor and program director of the counseling program at the University of Cincinnati, where she leads the Center for Traumatic Stress Research. She and several thousand mental health professionals are in Hawaii this week for the ACA's annual conference at the Hawaii Convention Center.